I'd like to call the meeting to order. Mr. Crawford, could you please lead us in the pledge?
Could you please rise, face the flag, and follow after me, please? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you.
There was no action taken in closed session. Our student representative to the board, Lauren Allen.
Hello. At MHS, we recently had our blood drive last week, and we had a total of 57 donors, which is 3 more than we had last time. And then we have lots going on this week. Today, we have our girls' basketball has their senior night, which I'm headed to right after this. And then it's also kindness and homecoming week. So for Kindness Week, we're doing lunchtime activities every day, and so like today's was kindness to each other. So we had students come by a table and write a kind note to each other and put it on our kindness wall. And then for homecoming, we have hallway build, and that's where all the classes decorate a hallway based on our theme, which is we got the beat this year. And then we also have voting for royalty king and queen nominations, and all grade levels get to choose who they want king and queen to be. Then we have a rally to pump up the students for homecoming and just to encourage them for school spirit. And then lastly, we have our basketball game this Friday for homecoming, and we'll do our royalty ceremony then. And that's it.
Great. Thank you very much, Lauren.
Thank you.
Next, we have our school reports. Covelot Elementary. Ms. Yeltz.
I sent the presentation to Brian. Is it on here?
Which one is it? The blue one?
This one.
This one.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. And then presentation.
I just wanted to thank everybody for giving me the opportunity to be at Covelot this year. I loved my time at Yuba Gardens, but I was there for a long time, so it's fun to do something different. So I just wanted to share with you, this is very brief, but I just wanted to share with you what I've been able to experience the last 6 months at Covelot. And I think all of these parent community involvement pieces are obviously important to Covelot and important to you also. And I put down there at the bottom with the asterisk, the traditions continue. I've experienced most of these pieces. It's a busy school with a lot going on in the evenings and on the weekends also. And those are just recent pictures from this year. Our next event is Read Across America Day, so that will be fun for me. I haven't been in an elementary school for 20 years, so this has been fun for me. And so we're continuing with all of those traditions, which are important. And then, of course, most importantly, at Covelot is just celebrating all of that academic success for our learners. And so we're continuing with Walk of Fame, which our learners love on Fridays, absolutely love. It's the cutest thing to see how excited they are every week, and they run up to me and tell me what all of their accomplishments are, and it's been fun. And then we have award ceremonies, our academic celebrations, our award ceremonies, where parents are invited to that also. And then lunch with the principal is, you know, 40 students once a month at Carl's Jr., which is fun. We walk over there and spend time together and acknowledge their accomplishments there also. And then most importantly, in my opinion, at Covelot is just continuing that whole PLC process and just asking all those right questions over and over. What is it we should be teaching? What are we using to teach? Are kids getting it? Are they not getting it? What are we going to do if they're not getting it? And what are we going to do to enrich the lives of those learners that are just doing excelling in school? And that happens at Covelot, continues to happen twice a day for these students in math and ELA, which is incredible. It's quite a schedule. And then collaboration for our teachers to continue to work with all of that data and support our learners in intervention and enrichment is continuing on Mondays, Tuesdays,
and of course minimum days. And then I'm very excited, so thank you, Mr. Cena, that 24 of our staff members are going to a PLC conference in June as we continue to push that work forward for our students. So we're very, very excited about that. And then just these are opportunities our students get to have during the year off campus. Some are on campus, but most of our field trips are off campus. And our staff members work so hard to raise the money for these field trips. And I know that parents contribute when they can also. So that's been fun. I don't attend too many of them because it's hard for me to be off campus, but I have been able to go to a few of them. And then Covalod, I wanted to explain this too because I didn't know if you knew this. Covalod was a gold ribbon recipient this year, but we are expected to meet the criteria for Distinguished School Award in for 18-19, but we didn't meet it for 17-18. And so when your Distinguished School Awards are given, they're old actually, they're 2 years past. So the awards that were given just what, 2-3 months ago that people were down in Anaheim for over the weekend, that was for 17-18 data. So it's old data. It's kind of weird how they do it. And we didn't meet the criteria for 17-18 due to chronic absenteeism, but that was corrected last year, and so the data looks good for 18-19, just so you know. And our data, I put this in my report too, but English language arts 22.9 points above standard, but we did decline 11.4 points, so that's a concern. And then math, we increased by 12.6 points, so we're at 19.2 points above standard. And then we declined in suspension and our chronic absenteeism rates. But one reason we're going to the conference too, along with the work we're going to be doing over the next 2 months, is really looking at the claims and targets as they're related to the blueprint and accountability, because we have to figure out why we declined in ELA. So that's what we're going to be working on for the next 2 or 3 months. Questions?
Yeah, Carrie? Yeah. I keep hearing what a great job you're doing there. I have a grandson that's there, and he comes home, and actually he was in a couple of those pictures. But you're doing great. I want to thank you. And I don't know if Doug comes by and visits, Doug Eshman?
Every week?
Every
week.
Sounds like Doug. But so anyways, keep doing it.
I know, I said, I told Mr. Eshman I was either really smart or really stupid when we took this job. I wasn't sure. But I'm just kidding. But it's been fun. So.
Of all the programs you listed on page one, I think the one closest to my heart is Grandparents' Day. My dad, before he left us, never missed either one of my kids' Grandparents' Day. And then 20 years later, I got to continue it with my oldest granddaughter. And it's just something, one of the tremendous things that school does.
Well, and it's nice how welcome families and grandparents, whoever it is, feels to come on campus. They feel very welcome.
Always.
Yeah.
You have an excellent campus there.
Yeah.
You really are. You do Marysville proud. Thank you.
Carrie, there's no doubt that I knew you would do a good job at Covalod. I remember when you came to Yuba Gardens, and before you came, I used to get calls every week what was going on out there. And with your skills, you brought that staff that was so disgruntled together. And I knew that when you went to Covalod, and of course, I have a daughter there that teaches there, and she thought, nobody's going to replace Mr. Eshman. Said, that was the feeling. And she said, Dad, I was so wrong. She is so good to us, and she's such a good administrator. And you're a true asset to this district when you came from Yuba City.
Any other comments? Davis?
Yeah, I had a visit with this very busy lady, and it was during a PE. I guess they're having a competition of some sort. Everybody was running up to her and wanting to hug her. And I just felt that is a sign of commitment, love, and caring that you can't make up. You can't fake that. And I just really appreciate the devotion that you have shown throughout your career, but Kovalai is kind of near and dear, and I really appreciate you involving Mr. Eshman. I know it's not always easy, but I think you brought your traditions with including him, and I think that's just remarkable. So thank you very much.
Mr. Cena?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Carrie, for all that you do and for our learners and our staff there. Thank you. Comments from board members? Mr. Davis?
Yeah, I had a chance to get back over to the Cedar Lane after they had their school accountability report and their review of their federal program monitoring. And I was impressed with Jill Segner in that, one, she had addressed the issues that was brought up with the federal program. She said, we only have one person and we've got it finished. So I thought that was a big feather in her cap for doing that. The issues with the school accountability report are kind of hit and miss. When you look at the report, what they're talking about and what's needed to be done is not accurate. It's usually a big conglomeration of a bunch of different schools that they've just grouped. So we went over some of the issues that she's had, and they continue. They're not anything new. But a couple of things that did come with our walk about was the cracks in the asphalt have expanded, and there's a big concern about the kids maybe tripping on them. So to me, that's an urgent need for that campus. And then the whole painting issue on that stucco, it just continues to be a challenge for the maintenance folks. But she is very, very happy with the response she's getting from maintenance and knows that everybody is doing what they can. But there's just some issues there that I really think we need to highlight. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Allison.
Yeah, I want to crow for a second. As I was driving down from Loma Rica this morning, or this afternoon, I was on some NPR station, and my high school was spoken about. And it turns out there's a young man there, a junior, DJ Herrera, who won a national speech competition and a scholarship for $10,000 from NPR. And I'm sitting here, as I was driving, I'm sitting here thinking, it's like, there's some real wrong things with education that apparently we can't fix. And that's the fact that the legislature is in control of it. And I was sitting there thinking, we test for math and we test for language, okay, language skills. And, math, we've got computers now. If you teach somebody how to, the algorithms, they can do anything on math. Do we really need to test for math? We will, and I support that, sort of. But language skills, there's nothing more important in education than to be able to communicate what you're thinking and be able to listen to other people and understand what they're trying to communicate to you. And so that's the major problem. Just imagine if people would listen to each other, and understand what they're saying. And so maybe we need to, sometime down the future, think about how we can do something to get kids to work harder explaining what they think and listening to others. It's kind of like the ideal when you think about education, and I know when I was teaching, we kind of always did that, but did we? So that's all I want to say.
Thank you. Mr. Boom?
Yeah, real quick. It seems like just yesterday we were out visiting the schools with their Christmas plays, seeing Mr. Gregor, a.k.a. Santa Claus, at all the schools, and I was chaperoning intermediate school dances, their Christmas balls, and now spring's upon us. Well, spring brings Read Across America time. And for those of you that haven't got to go do that and read to the kids, take a chance to go do that. I encourage everybody to go do that. The looks on their faces, the questions they ask, they're adorable. It's a ton of fun. And I just encourage everybody to, you know, pick a classroom, take an hour, and go do that.
Mr. Fleury.
Yes, talking about Read Across America, Kynoch was the first school that asked me, and my daughter is upset that I did not go to Covalot, and I've read in her class for years, so I'm going to try to juggle it. Also, last week, the Exchange Club, as you know, puts on, may not know, the Student of the Quarter, in which we represent the 9 high schools from Yuba City, Live Oak, 9 of the schools. And each one of the students, they get up there and ask them who their role model was. Almost all of them said their parents, but they also talked about the school people, the counselors, and the teachers had made a difference in their lives. One of the students of the quarter was, we have a card for tonight, was Lauren Allen, our board rep representing Marysville. It's amazing to listen to the stories they tell and the accolades they give to the school people. So it's not just the parents, but it makes a strong foundation for kids, and you've got to have a strong foundation. Having worked with kids that struggle, they did not have that. And thank God we've got good people in our schools that give that boost that they don't have the parents for. So, and Randy's got a card that he will give Lauren.
Yeah, what we'll do, we'll make sure we'll get it to her next week, Mr. Fleury. So Mr. Fleury brought a card for her, and all the board members and the superintendent signed it. So we'll make sure she gets it next board meeting. Thank you. Mr. Crawford.
I'd add on to what Mr. Fleury said about Reading Across America. Kynoch was very smart. She called me the very day it opened up and said, can you be here at 9? And I committed. And now Cedar Lane's mad at me, so I'm going to race from Kynoch to Cedar Lane at 10. I don't think I'll be able to pull that off because I don't race well. Anyhow, I understand that. One last thing, Girls on the Run, a program that initiated 3 years ago, my granddaughter participated in. It's beginning to start in full blossom with a lot more girls at younger levels. If you know of any middle school or younger girls that are interested, the women that donate their time and men to help these young ladies get in physical shape and learn about cardiovascular, everything, it's just fantastic. And they have a big running party at the end. And it's in its third year of existence. And please just spread the word. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Crawford. I'd like to give a shout out to Miss Angela Siegel and the Marysville Acadeca team. I think it was 2 weeks ago when I got to go and listen to the super quiz, and it's just amazing what all these kids can do when they're there. So, great job, Ms. Siegel. Opportunity for employee organizations to address the board. Marysville Unified Teachers Association. I thought maybe he just didn't want to talk to us.
Thank you. Sorry for the delay there. Angela Stiegel, the president for the Marysville Unified Teachers Association. And first off, I want to thank Mr. Rasmussen for the very nice words about my team. I did see some members of the board at competition. Mr. Sino was there. The team did an amazing job, and they are going to be representing Marysville High School, Marysville Joint Unified, and Yuba County at state competition next month.
Thank you.
So as for my comments for this evening, I will apologize ahead of time that they are a little lengthy. I have tried to pare them down as well as I could, so I hope you will bear with me and listen along. Some people here this evening are aware of the fact that for the first years of my teaching career, I taught both English and history. As I hope you all are aware, February is Black History Month. For many, many years, one of my historical interests has been the civil rights movement. Everybody knows and recognizes the name Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., as they should. However, not nearly as many people know and recognize the name Medgar Evers, and they should. I learned about Evers as a student at Chico State University. Medgar Evers was a fiercely loyal Mississippian who fought for our country in World War II and returned home to Jackson, where he fought for his civil rights and the civil rights of millions of citizens of color. Medgar Evers eventually gave his life for the cause of civil rights. He was assassinated in his driveway just hours after John F. Kennedy's landmark civil rights address of June 11, 1963. In that speech, JFK stated, "I hope that every American, regardless of where he lives, will stop and examine his conscience about this and other related incidents. This nation was founded by men of many nations and backgrounds. It was founded on the principle that all men are created equal and that the rights of every man are diminished when the rights of one man are threatened." Nearly 57 years later, these words still ring true. And unfortunately, they are ringing loudly in this district and in this community. Recently, a student in a classroom in this district was subjected to treatment that no student, no human being, but particularly no student of color should have to endure. When I learned of this incident, I was shocked and saddened and infuriated. As I tried to process my thoughts and feelings regarding the incident itself, I was thrown for another vicious loop when I learned how the situation was being handled. I began to wonder, though, if maybe my bewilderment and concerns were unreasonable. Maybe this was a truly unique situation for which nobody had any real precedents to lean on. So as my students do, I turned to the internet. I discovered this was not a unique situation. Nearly 3 years ago, a Florida community was stunned by a very similar situation that resulted in a student being suspended for 10 days and being transferred to an alternative school. More recently, just this past November, an Illinois school district investigated a very similar incident that resulted in a teen being charged with 2 counts of a hate crime, both felonies. The police chief of that community actually thanked the school district for their investigation. This, of course, sent my mind racing. How and why are we not being at least equally diligent in standing up for our students? As I tried to quell tears of extraordinary sadness and anger, I turned to the writings of Medgar Evers, one of my heroes, in an effort to find some guidance and counsel. I ended up viewing Evers' televised comments of 1963. In these remarks, he proclaimed, "The years of change are upon us. In this racial picture, things will never be as they once were. History has reached a turning point here and over the world." Evers' words, like JFK's, are as true today as they were over 50 years ago. I wish this wasn't the case. I wish I could say that the erasism slogan that I see on t-shirts was a has-been. I wish I had to explain to my students what racism and discrimination were, much like I have to explain what Watergate and the plumbers were. Evers is right, though. The time for change is upon us, and it has been. We have reached a turning point in our history. We can either go forward in the direction of progress, which will undoubtedly be uncomfortable for many and will require that we confront our past and our present. Or we can go backward in the direction of pain and ignorance, where we continue to stick our heads in the sand and leave numbers of our students to suffer on their own. Unfortunately, the incident of last week proves that not only do we have work to do, but we have a lot of work to do. We as teachers know we cannot rest as long as we have students who have to endure and cope with this sort of intolerable and excusable behavior. We also know that our administrators and their actions and beliefs, or lack thereof, are critically important. This is not work that teachers can do alone. Our students need us, and our students need administrators at their site and the district level as well. Our students need to know that their rights will be defended and protected at all levels, including that of the school board. Our students need to know that if all else fails, their school board will staunchly protect and defend them. I do realize that many, many people may think that it is easy for me to stand up here and cast aspersions. I wish I had the words to express to you how completely untrue this is. As I have said before, I was born and raised in this community, as were many, many employees of this district, and at least the vast majority of the school board and our superintendent. In general, my practice in life when I point out issues or problems is to at least attempt to provide some thoughts on solutions or means of improvement. With this topic, though, I will confess that I do not have all of the answers. I wish I did. But I know we have to do something. For one, I would suggest you read a book called White Fragility. I have a copy of it here. For two, I would highly recommend that we have a sit-down with a man by the name of Dr. Gregory Peters, who is with an organization called the San Francisco Coalition of Essential Small Schools. I have spent the last year and a half or more learning about equity, in particular, equity in schools and in classrooms, from Greg, who is an extraordinary individual with extraordinary knowledge and expertise in this area. He is and will be an asset. The main thing is we have to admit there is a problem. We cannot conquer a problem that we do not acknowledge exists. Medgar Evers was often asked why he remained in Jackson, Mississippi, especially after numerous death threats and the fact that there was little progress being made in Jackson. He would explain his love for and hope for Jackson, his hometown, and he would explain that he wanted his children to be able to experience a better Jackson. More than once, he stated, "I don't know if I'm going to heaven or hell, but I'm going for Jackson." In a very humble way, I would like to emulate Evers. "I don't know if I'm going to heaven or hell, but I'm going for Marysville. And I hope I'm not going alone, and I hope that I will have a number of you supporting me in my efforts to fight for our students of our community." Thank you.
Thank you very much. Operating Engineers, Local Union Number 3. California School Employees Association Number 326 and 648. Association of Management and Confidential Employees.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for the chance to come up. So as always, AMACE does a brief kudo on this night. This week, we actually had three requests come in for the same person. Knowing that we opened LPAC, so our EL testing, this last couple of weeks and just began, we had two elementary principals and one high school principal wanting us to give our kudos tonight to Amy Stratton for all of the support that she offers the sites. Anytime there's an issue, she's immediately out or on the phone with them to make sure that they get it resolved. And so our kudos tonight go to Amy Stratton. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Supervisory unit. Next, we have public comments. I see no public comment cards. Next, we have superintendent's report. Mr. Cena?
First of all, I'd like to thank Mrs. Eilst and Kovalad for your presentation tonight. Your focus on all learners will learn is apparent through your student, staff, and parent involvement, student, staff, and parent success, outstanding dashboard performance, you're largely in the green and mostly all in the green and blue, laser-like focus on improvement on claims and targets related to accountability measures. Also, congratulations to Mrs. Eilst for being awarded the California Music Educators Association Administrator of the Year, along with Becky Stewart, the music director at Yuba Gardens, who won the Middle School Music Specialist Award. Congratulations, both Becky and Mrs. Eilst will be honored at the California Music Educators Association Awards Gala in Fresno on February 21st. Congratulations. Congratulations also to the Marysville High School Ag teacher, Kayla Coughlin. At the National Ag Educators Conference in Anaheim earlier this year, Kayla was selected by PBS as a California high school ag teacher to be featured in their series, American Grown. KVIE TV Channel 6 sent a crew to film Kayla teaching all day at Marysville on December 10th, and the episode aired in January. Kayla did a great job representing Marysville High School, our district, and the state of California. Kayla is also this year's recipient of the California Ag Teachers Association CATA Outstanding Young Teacher for this Young Teacher for the Sierra Butte section, that link will be sent to you shortly. Congratulations also to Marysville High School varsity track coach Marcy Tarr, who this month earned the National Federation of State High School Association Award for Girls Outdoor Track and Field Coach for California. Prior to this award, Marcy won a San Joaquin Section Boys Section Championship in 2017, was named CIF San Joaquin Section Model Coach of the Year in 2018, and was recognized as CIF State Model Coach of the Year in 2019. Congratulations to Coach Tarr. Also, you received an email a few weeks ago. Congratulations to the following six MJUSD educators, classified educators, Anthony Nelson from Arboga and Erica Velasquez from McKinney. Both are student services coordinators. Certificated educators for the year, Lindsay Choate from Edgewater and Alicia Wright from Browns Valley School. New teacher, Jeremy Gillen from McKinney, and Tammy Smith from Ella. There'll be a dinner on April 23rd by the Yuba County Office of Ed for that program. Also congratulations to Angela Stiegel and the Marysville High Academic Decathlon team. I believe it's been 20 years, been coaching the team. And I believe Angela's led the team 18 of those 20 years to the victory, and I think it's 16 in a row. Also, next week, administrators who have been nominated by their colleagues and will be recognized next week at a AXA gathering in Yuba City. Secondary co-administrator of the year, Amy Eggleston at Marysville High. Elementary school principal of the year, Lori Guy from Edgewater. Business services administrator of the year, Jennifer Pasalia. Curriculum instruction administrator, Amy Stratton. And instructional technology administrator, Mr. Brian Williams. Congratulations to all. And closing our recognition there with Mrs. Eilst, also won this award within the last few years. Hopefully by now, everyone has watched the 9-minute LCAP video and reviewed the state dashboard synopsis sent to stakeholders on January 30th by Mr. Rocco Greco. Almost 200 stakeholders have completed the survey, including 20 in Spanish. On February 20th, we have our DLAC and DAC, District Advisory Committee meetings, to get more input, and we'll be having four more public forums along with two district LCAP Budget Advisory Committee meetings to obtain stakeholder input, identify student needs, and prioritize resources, all contributing toward meeting those needs. Hopefully, the LCAP video, the structural deficit discussion from the past couple weeks, tonight start to an ongoing discussion on reserves and continuing future discussions, including discussion on COPES, will help achieve a shared understanding of budgeting among all stakeholders so that we all understand the challenges we face and how to best navigate our way to do what's right for students. As we identify needs, we are working with Yuba County Office of Ed and a network of community agencies toward development of a family resource grant, a behavioral health grant, a bi-county mental health grant, a community task force, and directed assistance. Through this process, we hope to crystallize our students' needs and determine how to channel resources to best serve collective goals. All this is demonstrating that together, serving every student every day in every way. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cena. Next, we have the approval of minutes. Minutes from the regular board meeting of 1-28-20. If there was no additions or deletions, I'll entertain a motion. Motion to approve by Mr. Boom. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Fleury. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 6 yes. Next, we have the consent agenda. Are there any items on the consent agenda that a board member would like to have pulled? If not, is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second
by, was that Mr. Allison? Second by Mr. Allison. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries, 6 yes. Next we have new, or business services, new business. District reserve level, an informational item. Mrs. Lossing, the purpose of the agenda item is to discuss current board policy 3100 that states the board shall establish and maintain a general fund reserve for economic uncertainty that meets or exceeds the requirements of 5 CCR 15443 and the importance of establishing a more defined local reserve policy.
Good evening and thank you. This discussion was actually prompted by a question during our board meeting, last board meeting, regarding the budget structural deficit, and it was from board member Boom when he asked about our reserve level and where we were, how many months of payroll we had, and so forth. So I did a little research, being new to the district myself, and I discovered that our current board policy is very general in the area of our reserve level. And it basically just states that we should maintain the Ed Code 33128 Title V CCR 15443, which basically says that for a district our size, the state requires a minimum of 3%. Now that's nowhere near what is practical for us for a variety of reasons. And so I thought it would be best to bring this discussion to the board and we could go over and review the district's reserves. So what are our reserves? Basically, our components of ending fund balance, and that's for our general fund, that's our main operating fund of our district, and then we also add in the reserve fund 17 to that. But it has five different components in the ending fund balance: our non-spendable, and that's our revolving cash, and our inventory, which is what's housed out in our warehouse. Our restricted ending fund balance, which is our different categorical programs that have very specific uses, like our Title I, Title II, specific lottery money, and so forth. Our committed funds, which we currently have that are paying some other post-employee benefit OPEB costs, and those required a board resolution to commit those funds, part of our ending fund balance. Another component is the assigned. When we set aside certain funds for specific future use, and yet not at the level of committing it through a board resolution. Things like our one-time money that we've set aside for facilities, those fall under the assigned. And then the rest of it becomes unassigned, that there's been no specific purpose set yet. So those are our different components when we talk about what reserves are. And so why do we have reserves? Well, this particular slide came from the Legislative Analyst's Office just a few years ago, did a very broad study on school districts in California and their reserves. And this slide states the five main reasons: managing the cash flow, and then for mitigating the volatility in funding and expenditures, meaning, you know, when revenues and expenditures come in differently than what we expect. Addressing unexpected costs that come up, which we know that can always occur. And then sometimes you don't have enough money in one particular year to fund a particular project, so you could do things like assign that money until you grow it to the point where you're going to expend it. And then also, if we ever don't have proper cash flow for the business of our district, then as other districts have to do, we would have to borrow money within the year. And that's another reason of maintaining a certain level of reserves would preclude our district from having to do that. Other districts have to do that routinely, and that costs them more money to borrow that money within the school year. We don't want to be there. And so the importance of reserves, this just kind of reiterates again, it would be protecting us from things like the last recession when our funding was deficited, so they'd say that we would be owed this much, but we'd only receive, you know, less. And volatility in our local control funding formula, which we're experiencing now, because as you know, over the past several years, we've increased to our target level and received lots of additional funds, but now that we've reached that target, we're in what they call the COLA-only environment. So that's volatility. Unplanned expenses. Back when the STRS and PERS pension costs begin to increase, we really had no warning about that, and it's been substantial over the last several years. I remember probably the first 20 years that I was in school business, the district's portion of STRS was always 8.25%, and now it's over 18% in just a few years. Things like that is why we need reserves to protect us. Carryovers, cash shortages, again, that cash flow piece. And then really to protect programs. If we have a substantial reserve and we have to balance our budget like we're looking at now with our structural deficit, having that reserves gives us time to be prudent and thoughtful about where we need to make adjustments. And if we didn't have the necessary reserves, we would have to act quickly and frequently without as much forethought and being practical about it. So the other piece to this would be, we really want to concentrate on spending today's dollars on today's children, but not at the expense of tomorrow's children. And this looks at our statewide average reserve levels. And this was information from the School Services Governor's budget proposal for next year's budget that we just attended in January. And it looked at 17-18 statewide average reserve levels. And so unified school districts, which is what matches Marysville Joint Unified, they're at about 17%. And back 2 years ago, our reserve level was actually at 28%. The little bubble in the bottom states how we calculated the reserve, because it is fairly substantial calculation. We like to see how we do that just so that we're looking at apples to apples. And so our getting specifically to the Marysville reserve level, and it's higher than the statewide average, but that was 2 years ago, and this year, based on our first interim budget report, we would look to a reserve level of 20% at year end. So see, it has declined over the last couple of years. And so why do we need a higher reserve level than the statewide average? Well, we have a looming outstanding certificates of participation payment. It's a repayment of some prior financing. That obligation is going to begin in 2023. And so this is a little bit more information on that. And I believe that we, in the future, at another board meeting, we could talk about this a little bit more and understand better what this outstanding obligation is. Because what we're planning to do, if you recall from last board meeting, we're going to look at a five-year multi-year projection at our second interim in March, and that will show when we start making these payments that are substantial at $2.8 million. There's also a possibility of being able to, they call it refunding, but I think people are more familiar with the term refinancing. This particular schedule of payments at a lower interest rate that would save us some money and maybe a substantial amount off of that $2.8 million a year. And so we could talk about all of that at another board meeting when we talk specifically about that piece. But for right now, in our reserve level, that's another reason why we need to have a bit more than the statewide average. So this is the slide that I did last board meeting, and I just wanted to show you that again. The reserve level shows all five components. When you see the little box on the right of the slide that shows the rather larger amount, that does, the little bubble at the bottom, that does include restricted, committed. It has all of those in there. So when we look at what is actually spendable, we get down to that 20%. And I think it's important. And I know this is a lot of numbers, but it's really, if we just start at the top, our expenditures overall and other financing sources is almost, you know, $135 million. We have a large budget that's annual. And then our beginning fund balance and then ending fund balance. And then everything below that are what the components are of it. And I've highlighted, and I hope you can see it clearly, the highlighted areas are the unavailable, I guess is a good way to say it. Things like the non-spendable, that $268,000, that's our revolving fund and our stores, our inventory. We can't really spend that. And then our restricted is for those particular programs that have a restricted purpose. Our OPEB, that's committed by board resolution to fund other post-employee benefits for our retired employees. And then here's a list of our assigned, and then we have our reserve for economic uncertainty, and it all boils down to, you know, the total reserves less the amounts not available, and it brings us to that approximately 20% that we're projecting for year end. And as we know, the budget's always changing as we learn new information. So what are the common standards for our reserves or for anybody's reserves? And who do we look to for guidance in that area? Our legislative analyst's office, the LAO, they state that 17% is an amount equal to about 2 months of total expenditures. And that's a common standard for public agencies. And then another agency that we look at for a standard would be the Government Finance Officers Association. They also state that 17% is recommended. And so really, this boils down to our current board policy is a bit vague on what should be our reserve standard. We know that we need more than that minimum 3%. That just wouldn't work for operational purposes for the district. And the fact that we're looking at our structural deficit, we need to really define where is it that we want to not go below as far as what's a safe reserve for our district. And so knowing that the board's committed to maintaining a prudent level of financial resources to protect against the need to reduce services because of any temporary revenue shortfalls or unpredicted expenditures, we would recommend that we increase the current, and it wouldn't be done right now, but at a future board meeting, administration would recommend that we increase the minimum reserve level from 3 to 17%, and then we can continue the discussion as well. So that was my information, and I'm glad to answer any questions if I can.
Yeah, I have a quick question. If you have a, if you were to amend a board policy to read 17%, and then something comes up, a huge expenditure, and you have to spend below that, then you're then, not. Then how
well,
does that leave you?
Then we would work to regain that as quickly as possible, and sometimes you can look at budget savings at year end from your estimated actuals to your unaudited actuals. There's always a level of unspent budget amounts. You know, we have thousands of account codes, and that's one way to recoup is to whatever that that unspent money at year end can go toward building your reserve back, which doesn't affect any current year budget. That's one way to do it, but we would look for different ways, and that would be at the board's approval for returning the reserve to that level. So we would always want to be there, not go below, and if it were to happen, then we would work toward regaining that reserve to that prudent level.
Any other?
Yeah, I have another question. If you can go back to the slide that, right there, that mm-hmm. one. Okay, district's available reserve amount 27.5, but would that also, you'd have to take out because the government requires the 3% reserve under economic uncertainty, under E? You would have to pull that out from that, and that really isn't available. Is that correct?
You're right. That's true.
Okay, so it would drop you to 23 right. or whatever. Okay. I just wanted to make sure I was reading that right. And then back to one of your first slides, you don't have to go back to it, but spend today's dollars on today's children, but not at the expense of tomorrow's children. That's a great statement. I went 15 years ago, 20 years ago, round and round with one of our former superintendents. I think some people in this room still remember him. It was a long time ago. And he always wanted to spend all of today's dollars plus some of tomorrow's dollars, and it was like a runaway freight train. But anyways, I appreciate your approach and your common sense approach to this. But
thank you.
It was a great presentation. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions?
I just appreciate your transparency. I've been on the board 14 years, and we act on information given to us. When we're given accurate information, we know how to make decisions. The information you gave us was very eye-opening, and that's the best presentation I've heard from my 14 years on the board from a business manager.
Thank you.
You're doing a great job, and we know we have work to do, and we're gonna have to work on it.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I would also just like to say thank you very much, Mrs. Lossing. It is very easy to understand and kind of see where we need to be. So thank you very much for all that you're doing.
I appreciate it, and I'm glad to be here.
So we do have some closings. Mr. Crawford, would you like to go first?
This is not a time that I relish, but we've lost two very important community members, school members especially. The first, it's amazing how my recall of 1972 and 73 is a lot clearer than what I had for breakfast, but it's the truth. Lester Joubert, my site principal, called me in at Marysville High School, and of course I had my first panic attack. And she sat me down and she goes, Mr. Crawford, I just want to run three things. And she was a tremendous woman. Three things down to you. And I go, what is that, Mr. Bear? She goes, well, the first thing is seek out advice from any of these three individuals. And she named Merv Aiken. She named John Schnabel. And then she named Florence Kugelman. And that was probably the best advice I ever got in my life. And we just lost Florence about 9 days ago. She left quite a legacy. She was a tremendous leader, and more importantly, compassion and I couldn't explain in words just what it meant just to talking to her when I did. So, and one other person, Lowell Andrews, and he's gone now too. They're just tremendous people. The other two things during that meeting were she told me to get a haircut and don't wear Levi's. Well, at least I got one accomplished. That was old. In the old days, don't panic. I'm not asking for a dress code from anybody.
Anyhow, that is in remembrance of Florence Kugelman. Another person that I, as I transferred to Lyndhurst High School later on in my career, he used to come every day to see me, never had a bad word on to say about anybody, loved to talk about everything from 49ers to bowling. He was our custodian during the day shift. His name was John Fagan. He just died Sunday. His daughter, a student of mine, Mary Fagan Jones, is quite upset, is rightly so. But Johnny, wherever you're at, I hope there's a bowling alley. And a great guy. And I'd like to close in memory of this meeting and with everyone else, with Florence Kugelman and John Fagan. Thank you.
We also have Mr. Fleury. Mr. Fleury, is your... Thank you.
Thanks, sorry. Three employees who've been outstanding employees in our district. The first one was Sheila Stassi-Alves. She worked from July 17, 2006 to March 31st, 2017. She worked in the nutritional services, and then she was in the business office. And she was the youngest child of Mary Jane and Sam Stassi of Marysville. And I remember her as a bus driver. I had her as a kindergartner. She went to Notre Dame, and I had all the Stassi kids on my bus, along with all the Rollins kids. The second we lost was Vera Bull, and she worked at Anna McKinney School as the cook manager. She worked from September 8th, 1969 to June 15th, 1989. And she was just the kind of person that was a friend of the kids as they came through the line. In those days, we used to do a pilgrim day at when I was at McKinney, and she always helped us with that dinner, which was to feed all our kids, and then we put on the dinner, and you may remember that, Gary, for the district office, and we invited the other middle schools, and she was always so amenable to help us, and she was just a great person. And the third one was Verna Westcamp, who worked at Kynoch for 34 years. She worked from 9/1/68 to 9/8/2001. And so they're all great people that have made a difference in our district and left a mark.
Thank you very much. Meeting adjourned.